whatever you do, make certain your hands are clean.
Hello and welcome to Two Champs and a Chomp, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by Will Lentz, myself, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Major props go out to FFG for putting out a great game, George R. R. Martin for an amazing product, Card Game DB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward to the Creative Commons licensed music you hear today. Welcome to
Who
Season 3.
Said that? I don't remember that one.
Littlefinger.
Ah.
He's a big proponent of washing your hands to prevent the spread of germs.
You know, that's a good idea. That is a man ahead of his time.
Oh yeah, definitely. He always has little like hand sanitizer things.
Mm-hmm. You know, the best part is I'm staring at Daryl's picture here on Skype, which happens to be Littlefinger smirking from the show.
It's real nice.
Mm-hmm.
Daryl loves that picture.
Also with the caption, "You mad, bro?" Or it's just it's mad. Just,
yeah, I wish it said, bro. I really do. So, welcome back to Two Champs and a Chump after our world championship hiatus. This week, I think we've got a real surprise for all the listeners because we're all here, right?
I believe so.
Oh,
whew, what defines true. All?
Well, okay, good point. We are missing several of our erstwhile co-hosts from over the years. No John, no Fox, no Paul.
No Cat, right? Cat was on once.
Cat was on pretty regularly.
Yeah, she was on for several episodes. Yeah. And Kristen is here as well. More in spirit on the episode, though she is physically in my apartment. She waves. The listeners really get a treat out of that wave, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that really keeps their hopes up.
Yeah, that's good radio.
Tell Kristen I was shunning her and I was not waving back.
Greg was shunning you. He did not wave back.
Rude.
She found that quite rude.
I was hoping to get the middle finger.
Yeah, I was actually thinking the finger.
Well, you know, I could tell the listeners that it was the finger, and they'll get much the same effect. Now she did.
And now I feel so much better.
Mm-hmm. Well, for listeners who don't recognize those sultry tones returning to the show, why don't you introduce yourself?
This is Greg Atkinson. Dobbler. For the few times I post on boards anymore.
And the original champ, one might say.
From Two Champs and a Chump, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, not the very
the
first
original,
champ.
Not the original champ. That would be Casey Galvin.
Yeah.
I'm still Brett Zeiler.
I'm Daryl Lloyd, and I want your mom tonight.
And I don't know how to follow that.
I don't even know what I meant by that, to be honest with you.
Well, I'm Will Lentz.
And Daryl kills another episode.
Yep, there it goes.
He is getting really good at that. So this week, I think we're going to hit up a little world recap. I think get a little bit of a tourney report from our guys here. I had hoped to have some stats from FFG on the Worlds event so we could kind of see, you know, what house was most represented and that sort of thing. Unfortunately, I was not able to get any official stats, though I do have the top 16 that some other folks were kind enough to tabulate based on posts from the message boards and all. So we've got that. Should we start with some tourney / deck reports or bigger picture stuff?
Let's start with bigger picture stuff and then get into tourney reports.
Bigger picture. Okay. Well, I'm looking at the post here. This was compiled by Scantrell over on CardGameDB, who I met, by the way, over the weekend. So I was excited about that. But anyway, top 16 gave us 5 Lannister, 4 Targaryen, 2 Martell, 2 Baratheon, 2 Greyjoy, and 1 Stark deck. Gotta say, going into Worlds, I would not have picked Lannister as the most prevalent deck in the top 16.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that. And they also may have been the most popular house overall. I played a lot of Lannister all day, and I've seen a lot of tourney reports of people playing against a lot of Lannister. I mean, half of the hosts on the show played Lannister.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of weird.
Wait, no, Greg didn't play Lannister this year. He played Lannister last year.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of feel like I was ahead
of the
curve.
You guys all played Greyjoy.
Last year, I played a very, very similar Lannister deck to what people were playing. The only difference is I used Power Behind the Throne, and I didn't have the, you know, House Clegane Brigands. But, man, my deck looked a lot like these decks, you know, that were littering the field this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, except for filled with a lot more Kingsguard.
That's very true.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't play much Kingsguard overall, actually.
Well, the best decks played Kingsguard.
I think mine was probably the most Kingsguard heavy out of what I've seen out of those.
Did Navarro have like 4 or 5 of the unique Kingsguard in his decks?
No, he played Preston Greenfield, Jaime Lannister, and then the Aerys Sokar, but not the
Shadows
one. I'm
pretty sure I saw Boris Blount in there too.
There may have been. And then the Hound, I guess. But
I mean, so he played all the good ones.
That's true.
I mean, like that was quite the oversight, I think, that we had going into Worlds. At least that I had.
What's that, the Kingsguard?
Just how fantastic they were.
Well, I mean, keep in mind...
I mean,
we had
2 weeks to prepare with them?
Yeah. That's true. I mean, but it made my agenda just not worth anything. Like, they would discard down to 4, and then Preston Greenfield would come out of Shadows, and then Jamie would let him draw 3 cards. That happened in both of my games.
Are you thinking of our game, Daryl?
Not just our game. Yeah, our game and the game against Rings. And I'm sure if I played Avaro. Is that how you say it, by the way? Is it Avaro?
No, it's Avro.
Avro. Okay. Well, I'm sure that would have happened, too. Like, I mean, it was just useless. But, I mean, that's cool. The Kingsguard are really cool.
We can delve into that more maybe in your tourney report. Targ's back up, though, which is good. That was kind of more the prediction I made for Gen Con. Kind of lagging a bit there. Martell dropped quite a bit. And Greyjoy. I really thought some of the Greyjoy winter and choke stuff like you guys were doing was going to be pretty darn strong. But... Didn't really make it to the top 16.
Nope.
Aside from that, we've got a little bit of agenda info here, though I think he had tabulated one of these wrong. He's got 6 no agenda or character agenda, and 5 Knights of the Hollow Hill, but I believe one of those no agendas was actually Knights of the Hollow Hill. I think some folks corrected him on Brooksy's build.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brooks was actually playing Martell Knights of the Hollow Hill.
Yeah. Then there were 3 House of Dreams, 1 Black Sails, and the 1 Knights of the Realm. I'm kind of surprised about the House of Dreams at the moment. Wasn't really pegging it to make it to the top this year.
Interestingly, it was one of your favorite House of Dreams builds, or similar to it, using Widow's Watch.
Really? I did not even realize that.
Well, and to rub it in a little more, the deck that Chad Jamnick was playing, the Vera Knights of the Hill, was an army knight recursion deck.
Oh, I definitely heard a lot about that. Yep.
So basically, people took these decks you've messed around with, made them good, and won.
Yeah, I mean, hasn't that always been the case? Haven't we decided that people just play my decks better than me?
Generally, yeah.
Yeah. People.
I mean, I think maybe we could just take it a step further and people just play cards better than you.
Yes.
Oh.
Ouch.
I don't play cards better than you.
That's very true.
I mean, it was proven at Worlds this year.
It was. So, well, any other thoughts then on the overall? Well, we don't really have the overall field, I guess, but the top portion of the field here. Did the cut to top 16 annoy anyone else with a field that large in only six rounds?
Yeah. 138 players, six rounds cut to top 16 was not enough.
Yeah.
They needed a couple more rounds of Swiss or a cut to top 32 with that many players. And yeah. In my opinion, it's kind of unexcusable that they didn't do that.
I mean, did any 4-2s make it?
No.
There was 5-1s that did not make it,
which is stupid.
I didn't know that. See, I thought everyone that made it was 5-1. Now that sucks. I would say if everyone who went 5-1 made it, then I think it would have been fine. But I didn't know that 5-1s missed out.
Yeah, that would blow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. All right. Any other thoughts there?
Not really overall until we get more stats.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, how about some individual tourney reports? What do we want
to
do?
First off, I would just like to say Will Lentz did make the top 16.
He did.
I did. Thank you. I'm not really sure why you brought it up, but thank you.
Well, because, I mean, I know your typically humble self would, you know, only mention it in passing in your tournament report, and therefore I better bring it up, you know, to stroke you a little bit.
Oh, nice.
Greg does like stroking me. I thought, you know, maybe you were just rubbing it in that I still hadn't quite made it over that hump to being champ status yet. I'm still in that Trump field.
Well,
I don't think I get to rub it in this year since I lost in the same round of the Sweet 16 as you did. So.
Yeah, it sucks. It sounds like both of our decks just completely crapped out those games.
That's rough.
Yeah. Well, let's delve in a little more to that as far as it goes. We've done this before where we've gone with lowest placement on up to highest.
That's what I was going to say. We might as well start with me.
Okay.
All right. So
what'd you play, D?
I went in with a Song of Ice Greyjoy deck, one of which that Greg and I had been refining for a couple of months, at least. And
just for the record, it's about 5 weeks.
Okay. So not quite 2 months. So a month and a week, whatever. And I, you know, I felt confident about it. It played some fun cards. Well, actually, everything was pretty straightforward. There was no cancel in the deck, which I kind of regret. But it was tough making cuts, and we had talked about it before, and it just couldn't happen. Which may have been the downfall to me in the end. I don't know. It was, it was as choky as it gets. Sure. A few saves here and there, and then my sweet secret tech cowed, which we will get into later. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, first round, I am paired up against good friend of the show, Matt Lay, also known as Rings, who was playing Lannister, No Agenda? No Agenda, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And funny thing is that the night before, I had played him in some practice rounds with two different decks, Targaryen, Dothraki Burn deck that I thought was pretty awesome, which he schooled numerous times, and then my choke deck, which just never even came close. And I had this itching feeling that it's like, oh, you know what, I bet I'm going to see some Martell, and I just can't beat the control. It doesn't matter. I can't beat the control. They're going to have a bunch of gold. I should change decks, but it's too late. I said, fuck it. So he considers, you know, we continue the match, and he just kicks the shit out of me. There's no crazy first turn shit, whatever. He flopped like Fear of Winter first or second turn or something, and it was just over from there. I can't even remember. It's all blur. It's just one big ass whooping. Not even close. Preston Greenfield and Jaime Lannister made my life shit. And it, I mean, it was good on him. He had a great deck. Second game, I play a guy who is running another choke deck, and it wasn't close. After the game, it turns out that he was borrowing a Time for Ravens from his friend or something like that, and never put it in his deck. So he was running a
Winter Greyjoy deck. You were playing a Canadian guy.
Yeah, I think so.
I believe I played him first round, but we'll get into that in a little bit, I guess.
He's a super nice guy. I made a lot of mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes and still won, which was crazy. But anyways, it was all about who got the Marauders off and who did what first. So luckily I got that win. Third game, I think, is whenever I played Will. And Will is running Lannister.
You played Will round five.
Oh, was it round five? Okay, so yeah. Third round I played... Oh, okay, I remember. Third round I play a Targaryen player, Targaryen Knights of the Hollow Hill deck, and it was really nice. It was a really close game. I get the choke off pretty early, so, I mean, he's counting, like, one or two gold a turn. It was really awesome, but he was still able to push some stuff out, and it actually came down to the last turn. I have a Marauders on the board with a Risen from the Sea on them, Craegorn, and one of those little, the little one-cost Tricon guy that if you have all more locations. Thank you. And he has the Shadows, Jorah, a Carrion Bird, and plus one strength Dany. I flop a Cowed on Dany. So through the whole game, I had played like Burning Bridges at one point, and he brought a Pyromancer's Apprentice out, and he's like, can I take that back? Because I didn't know it was Burning Bridges or something. And I was like, no. And so kind of through this whole game, there were things like that would come up where I just wouldn't give this takesy backseat type stuff, which I, you know, kind of makes me feel like a dick. But then again, we're in a tournament.
It shouldn't.
You know. Anyways. So we get down to it. I have... my Craegorn, by the way, has Captain of the Iron Fleet on him, which gives him renown. And he's only one strength. So the guy militaries me with the Carrion Bird and Jorah. And I have to defend because he stealth Craegorn. Or he stealth the Marauders, rather. So I have to defend because I don't want to give him the power because he's at like 13 power or something ridiculous. And he forever burnings my damn fair's drowned, and he was like, oh, he's two strength, isn't he? He's like, do you mind if I take that back? And I was like, you played it, dude. So I defend with damn fair's drowned. He's claimed to, I have to kill the Marauders and damn fair's drowned. Then, I mean, all he has is standing is Dany, which has a Cowed on her, so he can't do anything. So then I continue to power challenge for one strength with Craegorn to win the game. So had he forever burning my Craegorn, I probably would have lost that game. So it just goes to show you, read those cards.
Yep.
and I felt like a huge dick. Afterwards, I tried apologizing. He's just like, dude, you know, it's a tournament. If we were just hanging out in a draft or something, I don't give a shit, but whatever. Next round, I played, oh, God. Now we're getting to the nitty gritty, and I just can't remember who it was. Oh, yeah. Next round, I play, his name is Jensen is his last name.
Oh,
it's a fellow drunk threader, which is really awesome. Really, really cool guy. Where is it? Justin Jensen. Yeah. That's his name. Really cool guy. Jensen 22 on the boards. He is playing a Baratheon House of Dreams Huntress, I think it was the card. I don't remember. It did something with like a knight or a lord and a Malian renown.
Yeah, that's Huntress.
Okay. So I just, from turn one, had nasty choke on him. It was ridiculous. Burning Bridges was just money. He had, like, a seat of power and stuff, and he just couldn't use it, and it was just a landslide. But really awesome guy. That's where my winning ended. After that, I played Will, who destroyed my world. I could not do anything. We even forgot about my agenda. It wouldn't have mattered in one round.
I was going to say, it was only the one turn that we missed it, though.
Like it would have mattered. It doesn't matter. He was drawing all the cards ever, counting all the gold ever. Whatever. After that, I continued to play Kyle Vansel, who was playing Martell, Knights of the Hollow Hill. Or not necessarily Hall Hilton. No, Hotel Quentin. Yeah. He set the tempo by pretty much first turn. I had flopped an Alanis and something else, and he had Quentin and something else, and he flops Red Wedding and just destroys my chance of doing anything. So it was not even close. So I went 3-3. Only lost to my good friends, which is the most bittersweet thing that will ever happen to you. It sucks playing this game sometimes and just being such good friends with everyone, and then you have to play your friends, because like I could play these guys not necessarily any time I want to, but a lot of the time, and so that kind of sucked. Overall, I'm okay with my performance. I mean, those decks were really awesome. At some point, I'll talk about getting that itch in your gut that makes you want to change your deck when I think I probably should have, but oh well, this is a solid deck. So that's my tournament report. I'm not going to go into plot details or whatever. It was it's crazy. Brett, right?
Yeah, I'll be next. I did go 4-2. I was if they had cut to top 32, I would have been in. But as it did not, I did not make top 16. I was playing a very similar Graduate Choke deck to what Daryl was playing, maybe a couple cards different. Probably not more than two or three cards different, though. Again, I mean, playing Cowed is, actually a surprisingly powerful card. Super heavy choke, but not running like Newly Made Lords, because they can't hit limited locations that provide income. And then not running Ice Fisherman, because outside of Winter, they're just completely worthless. But aside from that, it was a lot of the standard choke stuff, plus some plot choices like Burning Bridges, Searching to Detain, and Blockade for some more choke effects that can be kind of on demand. So I started out in round one playing a really nice lady, Sarah Paulson, I want to say her name was. She was playing Stark No Agenda with Mage Mormont. And for the first two turns, she cleared my board every single turn. Between military claim, she was playing heavy two claim plots with Die by the Swords. She played two on me on my first turn. She won a military challenge I made against her, and then she won her military challenge. It was until turn three that I was finally able to get my choke online. Basically, the turn before that, I had to play a Windermere as my only character, not make any challenges with him, save him, and then the next turn I was able to start getting my stuff going. I Valored and saved my own Windermere, stuff like that. And after that, I think she kind of won more gold for the rest of that game. So after a couple turns of getting just smacked around, I got in control. Round two, I played against good buddy John Krause from out in Cali. He was playing Lannister No Agenda, very similar to what like Bruno and Alvaro were playing. Really, the Graduate Choke deck, it really splits against Lannister. It all depends on their setup, honestly. Their setup in their first turn, if they get the gold, it's hard to win. If they get, just kind of average, maybe just, a couple gold guys or, a couple little gold locations, it's pretty favorable. And he didn't get a huge gold setup, so it was kind of a steamroll. I don't think he had any power in his house when I won the game, and only a couple cards in play. I controlled it from turn one pretty much forward. Round three, I played against one of the, I want to say, French players. I don't remember his name. He wasn't the actual French champion who was actually Swiss, but I think they knew each other. But he was playing Lenny Tunnels, though, and that game was over in about 20 minutes. I blockaded first turn. He wasn't able to play. He spent a lot of turns just spending all of his gold to put a single card into Shadows. Choked him out hard and heavy from turn one forward. The next round, I played against Christian Na out in California again. He was playing Stark Shadows, and Shadows is actually pretty favorable because they tend to be really good. They need a lot of gold. But that game, he actually choked me out. He made it Winter on his first turn going first. I had a Sunset Sea I saw in my setup, and then on plot 7 I drew another Sunset Sea, and that was all the economy I saw all game. So I had multiple turns where I didn't play a single card. I just couldn't afford to play anything in my hand.
Oof. That hurts.
And he had between Kingdom of Shadows and King's Roads and his own limited gold producing, he had seven gold producing locations by the end of his plot too. So that game was out of my control early on. Really nothing I could have done about it. I draw against Clue in round 5. And that was that one of them I game against, the Lady Tunnels deck, one of my most dominant games. I think Clue had 3 gold to play with the entire game. The only relevant thing he played, he used multiple hours as the takings on a refurbished Hulk to put a Aegon's Hill into play. He got to use that once, and then I search and attain it the next turn and proceeded to win the game pretty handily. And then last round, I played against Will Lentz. That was a game. He plays this stupid card called Queen Mint that sucks, but just absolutely destroyed me. If he didn't have that card, I'm pretty sure I would have won that game pretty easily.
Yeah.
But he had a Queen Mint on turn 1.
Hey, which card was it?
Queen Mint.
Mm-hmm. Coin Mint. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. I couldn't understand you.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. What exactly was the situation? Had you blockaded this first
I blockaded first turn. You had a really crappy setup. You had 2+1 gold guys, so you're going to have 2 gold that turn to put like a card into Shadows or something. I don't know. There's only so much you can do with 2 gold. But you used the 2 gold for a Coin Mint, and that turned into 4 gold, and then it was all downhill from there. So yeah, good job with Coin Mint. Well, that card sucks.
It was pure luck there. If I remember right, I drew that card that turn.
Did you? God damn it.
He's paying you back for that too proud to bow.
Yeah, exactly.
Fair enough. But no, I mean, unlike Daryl, the Greyjoy choke deck, it is monstrous. I lost one game to just kind of random variants where I just had no economy. The deck plays a ton of economy. I was frequently counting 10+ gold on my turns.
Oh, yeah.
I was always rolling the dough, except in the one game against Christian and then my game against Will. Coin Mint. Occasionally there's that one card that just beats your deck. But no, the deck is super fierce, and I'm shocked that neither Daryl or I went further than we did, because the deck just, like, I played at least 10 games the night beforehand, and then even more games throughout the day. I think I lost once to Daryl in testing with his Targ and the Hollow Hill deck, and then aside from that, I didn't lose any games except for those 2 in the tournament. So probably 20-ish games, I lost 3 total.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's my world report.
Okay. Considering a replacement in the Swiss, I guess that would be me next before Greg, yeah. Then. Well, it's a funny story. Like all the truly great Joust players, I abandoned my previous deck ideas the weekend of the tournament and built something completely new. Actually, on the ride up to Minnesota, I started working on a Lannister Neil everything control deck for Melee, because I was kind of tired of playing some variety of Greyjoy Rush unopposed, and I decided that I really enjoyed how it played. So then Friday on our dead day, I tweaked it, pulled out some of the more Melee specific stuff, and kind of tweaked it for Joust, and I think maybe played 2 test games, maybe 3 test games that day, and took it to Joust. Wound up with Knights of the Realm, which I think I accidentally skipped mentioning there, and a bunch of the new Kingsguard. So round 1, I wound up playing against a Canadian guy from the Thunder Bay group, whose name I actually forget now, who was playing Greyjoy Winter, and right after the game ended, explained that the reason he never made it winter is because he was playing his Melee deck from the other day when he had been able to borrow a copy of Time for Ravens, but he had to give it back and he couldn't find a new copy. Hence me thinking, Daryl and I must play the same guy.
Yeah.
So yeah, the game just did not go very well for him, because he couldn't actually get his stuff running. He was stuck waiting on drawing his Ravens. he was only running two because he was counting on being able to search for the Ravens. So he was doing what he could to try and kind of keep my control locations like Pantoshi out of the way, but it just wasn't enough. Though I hadn't seen the plot dry season in forever, and that legitimately kind of screws Lannister control for a turn. So props to him for that, at least. Round two, I went on to play, let's see, shoot, I wrote these down the other day and then promptly forgot. Round two, I believe, was Rob from DC, who was playing a Targaryen Knights of the Hollow Hill, burn deck. And it turns out Lannister's weenies don't fare well against Targ burn. He hammered me pretty hard, burned off some knights, had some of his own dragon knights popping into play and stuff. So I think a couple turns he actually had more knights than me. The game did not go all that well, and I definitely lost that one. Third round was against Steven from Team Covenant, who was playing a pretty sweet Greyjoy Raider Rush deck. Like, he's always a pretty strong Greyjoy guy, but it's always something a little off-kilter from the other Greyjoy that I've been seeing. And he hit me hard. I was just trying to oppose what I could and keep him from gaining power too fast. And I hate to say it, but the game wound up hinging on a mistake we both made. When he wound up standing Euron Crow's Eye with a to be a Kraken, which he used to cancel a Pantoshi Manor of mine, I played Paper Shield on the to be a Kraken, so that the Pantoshi Manor would still go off and take his renown for the turn. Well, unfortunately, we realized at some point on the next turn that I shouldn't have been able to play the Paper Shield because this was the Raider Euron Greyjoy who keeps opponents from playing events while he's attacking.
Ouch.
Yeah. I felt really silly, just like legitimate thing. I'm so used to seeing the discard Euron. Like, I haven't seen anyone in our meta play any Euron other than that one basically since he was released. So it just didn't cross my mind that it was any other Euron for some reason. And, you know, unfortunately, Steven didn't notice it and didn't say anything until next turn either. And, you know, at that point, we just kind of had to keep playing as we were. So I was able to stall him out and claw back up to victory with him at, like, 13 power? 13 or 14, something like that. And just claw back up. The double resets, Wildfire and Valor, definitely paid off in that game. Next round, I was up against a friend of the show, Kyle Vansel, who was playing a Martell Knight, not Knights of the Hollow Hill, sorry, a Martell Quentin deck.
He built it that. Both you and Daryl said he was playing Knights of the Hollow Hill to begin with.
Oh, yeah. That's probably why I accidentally said it this time. I was still thinking about what Daryl said. And that was actually a deck that I was worried about because I know those Quentin decks run quite a bit of knights with those unique guys now and everything. And we had actually played a test game the night before that had drug on for like a dozen or 15 plots or something, just kind of crazy, before he managed to pull it out. So I was kind of dreading this matchup because I knew we were both running double resets. So nothing character-wise was going to get to stick on the board for very long. But again, it was just kind of an attrition thing. He hit me with a couple well-played Game of Savas, which was not a restricted card that I was really expecting people to go back to these days. The Paper Shield paid off at some important times. And eventually he just got down to the point where Shadow Zarion was basically his only worthwhile character left after all the extra resets. whereas somebody like Preston Greenfield was able to keep dodging everything. So I definitely learned in those matches that his ability to never be in play during the plot phase is one of the most fantastic things about him. So I won that game. Went on after that to play Daryl in round 5, and he kind of already enlightened me on that game. It started out, I think, fairly even until I managed to get Jamie online, and that, I think, was the only game all day where I got Jamie drawing 3 cards a turn, which is just kind of crazy card advantage for the other person to try and overcome. And yeah, we did miss Daryl's agenda, for one turn. And then I managed to draw into a, carrion bird and shuffled his raven back. So we did not miss it for very long. Then of course I had the, intense fun of playing yet another one of my meta mates in round 6. Like Brett said, he pretty well, covered the game there. It came down to that that turn 1 coin mint, which was kind of a last minute switch in the deck. I was originally playing Lannisport Treasuries, and then the more I got thinking about it, I got to really worrying about King's Law and what I would do if somebody ran that against me, because you know the Kingsguard are all looking pretty phenomenal. So I swapped those out for the coin mints, thinking I could use 3 gold off of them, leave one sitting there, whatever, and, you know, be able to use that to kind of play around with bringing my Shadows guys out earlier in the phase, or sorry, in the round. And turned out to not need it for that reason the entire day. Did not see a single copy of King's Law. So wound up winning that game against Brett. Just a potentially bad matchup for him with all the plus gold guys. Went on, made the cut to the top 16 as the 14th seed, I believe, which left me playing against Mr. John Bruno. I had not been at a feature table all day, but this match they decided to make a feature match. They actually had 2 tables going over there in the streaming section. And at that time, they had the Star Wars 2v2 finals game playing. And much to my thankfulness, since I lost against John Bruno, that game actually lasted so long that they never switched it to our table. It was still running even after we were done. But, yeah, I took a gamble. I didn't really know much about John's deck. So I took a setup without any knights, but it was like 4 cards and I think like 2 gold weenies and a gold road or something. And like, I was feeling pretty good about it, and I had a Pyromancer's Cache in my hand. So I was thinking, okay, you know, this will be good. I don't have a knight. I won't get the extra draw, but I've got a lot of resources and I can get a cache online fast. And then I drew back up into still no knights, no shadows cards, but a second cache, and both of my enslaveds, if I remember right. So we go on to our first plot phase, and I'm kind of stuck because I can't lead off with my city plots like normal. I wind up starting out with City Besieged in the hopes that I'm going to draw into some shadows cards. For City of Lies, is it?
Yeah. Yes, City of Lies.
Yeah. Did not have any luck there. Turned out one of John's setup cards was Preston Greenfield, who he, you know, then brought out in the draw phase to slow my draw down. Like, I could just never get back up on night presence. Couldn't steal anybody with enslaved. John didn't play anyone of below 3 cost, aside from a single Toman, who I took, and then next turn, of course, John flipped City of Soldiers to kill Toman,
mm-hmm.
Which was a bummer, because between the draw from him and the cash that would have then been drawing me 2, maybe I would have been able to get something, but man, just nothing seemed to go my way there. I drug the game out for five turns, but did not initiate a single challenge the entire game. So it's kind of a depressing end to a good run. So that's me.
Gregor.
All right. Well, I don't know how much I want to get into game-by-game breakdown, mostly because I've already kind of posted this online for those that visit either CardGameDB. I posted the link on their forums and the Game of Thrones forums. I posted the link there. But I wrote out, kind of a breakdown of the games and a little bit of the leading up to Worlds for my deck, at AGOT Cards, under an article titled The Evolution of a Character-like Deck. So really kind of what I wanted to talk about is maybe go into more detail about the process of why I chose this deck and what went through it. Some background. This deck originally was actually not mine. A lot of times I get credit for crazy and inventive decks or off-the-wall decks or offbeat decks. And while this one is definitely all of those things, the initial card-by-card breakdown, which it did end up changing over the several weeks, but it came from John Bruno. I have played with Rainus Hill Recursion decks many times before, always loved it, but none of them were character-like decks. But this particular one was a character-like deck where John Bruno had sent me a deck list probably 6 to 7 weeks before Worlds. I built the deck. The first time I played with it, I played against Will, who was using a Bera deck. And I felt so slow with the deck. Like, I just did not have any feel for what's the proper order to play cards. How do I play out the game? How do I slow down the game? In that game, I really rushed hard to get Aegon's Hill out and just tried to eat up Will's hand. And, you know, he's playing Baron Knights. And it was just, there's nothing special about that Baron Knights deck. It was just a Baron Knights deck. You know? And I even thought Will was going to win the game. We still ended up playing for at least an hour and a half, if not two. And finally, Will's dead pile is so populated that he's just like, all right, I can see. And, you know, I probably would have won the game in another turn or two, but it was this really long game. But something really appealed to me about that deck. I was just like, I like this. It's only got five characters, three Fleabottom Scavengers, one Newly Made Lord and one Alanis Greyjoy. And honestly, they're not even meant to be used as characters. They're just meant as utility cards. You know, Fleabottom Scavenger to draw cards, Newly Made Lord for some spot character or for some spot location control, potentially even on my own locations if they hit me with Frozen Solid or Climbing Spikes, and then Alanis just for extra cancel. And so over the next few weeks, I played the deck, you know, on and off with other decks. You know, I had a variety of other decks I played, but I always enjoyed that one the most. And I played, Will, I played you a few times with it. I played Daryl a few more times with it. Daryl would always ask me, he'd be like, so are you thinking about that deck for Worlds? And I'd be like, you know, I kind of am. And he's like, dude, I don't think you can win in an hour. And, I mean, that was a very common conversation for Daryl and I to have. Is for him to say, you know, I like that deck, Greg, but I just don't think you can win fast enough with it. And as we got closer and closer, I really wanted to play it. I really did. And so I ended up putting in a couple cards to try and make it faster. Like, I put in Oak and Shield Port to speed the deck up, and that card did win me a game when we were getting close to time limit in a game. Just kind of culled out some card. I mean, took out some stuff that I thought wasn't necessary, you know, put in even more cancel into the deck. And, so I ran with it. And, you know, be sure to check the deck list. It is a very different deck, as I've already mentioned, five characters. The primary key to the deck is to get Iron Lore going with Rhaenys' Hill and Pyre of the False Gods. It is not meant to set up the Eternal combo. Like, there's the deck that Clue was playing and Nick Agronoff was meant to actually deck yourself and then set up this repeatable turn after turn combo. While my deck wasn't really meant to do that, mine was a little slower, but I think a little bit more control-y, and a little bit more resilient. And again, you know, there exists the possibility with my deck that I could burn myself by, you know, not getting Pyre of the False Gods out or getting Pyre out and not having any Iron Lords in my discard pile in order to, you know, recycle them, and they all just would go to my deck, and then I'd have to hope I keep redrawing it. But at the end of the day, playing that deck is kind of like playing a different game, okay, where my opponents are, you know, have their normal mix of characters and locations and events and attachments, and they're probably going to have a smattering of character control in their deck, whether it comes in plot form with Valor Morghulis or Wildfire Assault or the city plots, or they're doing it, you know, with cards in their deck. If they're Lanny, you know, they'd have the House Divided or the Character Steel attachment, which I can't even think of the name right now.
Enslaved.
Yeah, Enslaved. Or Targ Burn with all their burn cards. Basically, what happens is when I sit at the table with this particular deck, every one of their character control plot cards ends up being a tool for me. Their own Valor is now my tool, okay? Because it's not going to hurt me, ever. I don't care. I have these five characters. At the moment I've played the character, it's just about done what I've wanted it to do already, okay? And all these character control event cards or, you know, responses that they have in their hand, again, I'm probably not going to care one bit. So I've now created a number of dead cards for them. So that's one of my favorite things about it, is I'm playing a different game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that that's kind of how I've morphed as a player, you know, that I've become this pseudo Jamie, pseudo Shaga, where the Shaga part of me basically says, I want to play a game where instead of getting off big, massive combo, instead I sit at the table and say, screw you. Good luck. Because you're playing one thing and I'm playing something completely different in terms of what we're trying to do in this game.
That is an awesome feeling. I mean, having done that to a somewhat lesser extent with the Stonewall build, it's really fun, you know, mm-hmm. when you know what's going on and the opponent does not.
I dig it.
So, so I did end up choosing to do it. Over the course of the, you know, 6-7 weeks that I was practicing with the deck, I did change out a number of cards from what John Bruno had originally sent me. I mean, I probably ended up with at least 20 cards different. Plots only changed a couple. And, you know, I mean, it was one of those things that over the weeks I'd also talk to John and he would make changes to his and see how it worked for him. And we did have some differences and he chose not to play his and played his Lanny deck instead. And I did choose to play mine. So, you know, getting into the tournament, I had a bye in the first round. Second round, I played one of the Canadian guys. He was the one that had the really cool little helmet. His name was Tyson Villa.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. Interestingly, he was playing Greyjoy Choke. And he, I mean, the first couple turns, he was even saying, what are you trying to do with your deck? You know, because I'm just playing all these out-of-house cards, doing weird stuff, and I get Aegon's Hill early in the game and start just pulling characters. And that's all he had in his hand. Like, first turn, I look at his hand, and he has, like, five cards in hand, all characters. I'm like, wow, well, at least I know he has no saves. So I'm pulling characters, playing Valor early because I knew he couldn't do anything about it. And you know, eventually by around probably turn four, turn five, the game just completely swung where all he's doing is top decking. And since he had drawn so many characters early in the game, he was top decking locations like nuts. So, you know, walking away with it. He did top out around 11 or 12 power, But with my deck, that's one of those things, you know, I knew would happen in a lot of games where players would get up there. They could get up to 10, 11, 12, you know, and I just had to make sure I was very conscious of exactly where they were at and, you know, not let them get to that, you know, precipice where one minor mistake and, oh crap, they just won dominance. I didn't realize it because Dagmar Cleftjaw gives them plus two dominance for every warship or something like that, you know. So I won that game. Next round, I play Kyle Vansel, which you guys have already mentioned because you've, one or two of you guys played him, and he was using the Martell No Agenda deck. He got off to a roaring start, first turn, playing the, Game of Thrones where characters don't kneel on intrigue challenges, and he got multiple power on a couple renowned guys. Second turn, I played Bungled Orders. I could see him thinking about it. You know, do I attack and let him go into Valor? And his mind, he's like, I might as well just let him because he'll just reveal Valor next turn anyways. Which is, I'm just going to tell you guys, if you're playing against Bungled Orders and you're pretty sure they're going to go into Valor, don't do it. Let them wait to use their Valor in the next plot where they only get two gold and no claim.
Yeah.
You know? But he went ahead and did it. I cycled into Valor. And then that turn, I also played a reset plot to get rid of one of his characters he had duped. So basically, I cleared his board by the end of that turn. Next turn, he puts out the Red Viper, the one with Stealth Renown and Warcrest, and another renowned guy, and gets a little bit of power from them, you know. And so I'm still going to keep an eye on power because he's already at five or six on his house after that crazy first turn. And then gets a couple on the Red Viper and another guy. And I was pretty sure dude's gonna rush for the win against me. I know Kyle well enough. Having two renowned guys on the board and knowing, you know, with several unopposed challenges with those guys, he's gonna win. So I played Fortified Position, fully expecting this to the Spears, and that's exactly what happened. So no renown for him. I hold the game out for another turn. The turn after that, I play Question Claim, limit him to one challenge. Again, stall the game out for another turn. And then the turn after that, I get the Red Viper killed. I don't remember exactly how I did it, but I did it.
It was you have a turn. I think it was Westeros Bleeds and a Storm the Gates in the same turn.
No, that was another game.
Was it another game? Okay.
Yeah. I think I actually might have discarded the Red Viper and moved into his head tank with Visenya's Hill, actually. I just don't remember what it was.
Good old Visenya's.
Yeah. And so then Kyle just said, okay, I'm done. You win. Because at that point in time, he had like six guys in his dead pile, and one Rhaenys's Hill was going to get me really close to winning. So, and he knew one or two turns of that, and it was over. Round four, I played Kyle Szyszlinski. I don't know if I pronounced that right. We were actually at the feature table, and so people that were watching the FFG feeds got to see my game, and I was, you know, on one hand, that's cool being at the feature table. On the other hand, I knew I had a deck that I didn't want people to know the tech because you do, you know what my deck's trying to do. It's, I mean, you really have a much better advantage. When you don't know what I'm trying to do, it's completely different. And so, you know, I knew that word was going to get out there a lot more now that I'm at the feature table of what was inside my deck. Kyle played a great game. He got his card draw going early. He draw capped himself at least the first three turns. Thankfully, I was able to get plenty of draw, and it was a very weird game because we're both drawing a ton of cards. I get my pieces out early. I get Aegon's out early. I'm getting some cards from his hand. I play Artists for the Taking to duplicate it. He blows up Aegon's with a Condemned by the Council. I end up getting my Rhaenys Hill Recursion going pretty early as well. And then all of a sudden he drops Tywin. And now it's like, okay, now it's like, who can dump as many cards out of their hand as quickly as possible, you know, to activate Tywin? Because I knew that I was going to get Tywin killed eventually here. Mm-hmm. And I wanted less cards in my hand, so when I brought Tywin back with Rhaenys's Hill, I would get the benefit of him. I was never able to do that, though. Kyle was able to dump more cards than I was. But once I got the combo going, he just couldn't, you know, do anything against me. Military challenges are useless because I'm killing his own characters that I just brought out of his dead pile, you know, and so all I got to do is make sure I'm defending intrigue and power at that point in time. And I mean, again, I'm playing a different game. When I'm playing with your characters that are going back in your dead pile at the end of the phase, it's a different game. So I just ended up you know, just through attrition and time, you know, ended up winning that game with the recycle. That game did go close to time though. I think there's maybe 5 minutes left or so. Kyle played very well. There was one point of trepidation when he, hand judgmented my Iron Lore where I was going to get back Rainus' Hill, and I didn't have any of my own, cancels. Which, and I play a lot in that deck, like 3 paper shields, which wouldn't have worked against Hand's Judgment, plus a couple of C6 and my own Hand's Judgment, but I just didn't have anything to cancel. So it went through, but I was like, all right, I just need to make it through this turn, and I did, and it was fine. Next round, I play Alvaro, playing the Landy No Agenda, of course. Anybody who has read anything or heard anything knows Alvaro was the eventual Joust champion. That game was very interesting in the sense that he got out a duped Toman early. And Toman's potentially problematic for me because he's a king, and so he's going to turn off Question Claim, which is one of my control cards early in a game, and I drew into both of them. So, you know, it was one of those things where I'm like, okay, I got to deal with Toman. I don't remember exactly if I played a reset event or if it was on a Valor turn. It was one or the other, but I did the wipe. He saved Toman, and lo and behold, I have Drinking the Sea in hand. So I canceled the save, drew a card to replace it. And, oh, I mean, the man. Look on his face was like, you really just played this card against me?
Oh God, pro plays.
For the record, I wish I'd played with more copies of that card.
I can't believe it. You found the only deck it works in.
What?
I said you found the only deck it works in.
Well, the truth is I want their guys dead, and I want them off the board. And there's a lot of saves being played now. Obviously, in Greyjoy, you're going to see a lot. And in Targ, you're probably not going to see any unless they're playing the old Bouncing Viscerus. Okay, but there are enough duplicates and such in all the other houses that, you know, you actually end up seeing more saves than you think. And there were multiple times in other games I had wished I had had more Drinking the Sea, that I was just thinking, I wish I had Drinking the Sea. I wish I had Drinking the Sea, and I just didn't draw it. And then that game kind of became a weird choke game where Alvaro was running the city plots. Of course, all the character control ones don't affect me. So when he would get to the repeat one or the copy one, which is, I don't even remember what it's
City
called.
Spiders.
Spiders. Okay. He would always copy City Besieged. So he'd play City Besieged. We'd both lose the location. He'd copy it. We'd both lose the location. We recycled plots, came back around. City Besieged. We'd both lose the location. Then he copied again, we both lose the location. Well, I've lost 4 locations, but so has he. And he ended up blowing up his own economy to the point where he didn't even have income on the board. And keeping in mind that he's Lannister and therefore also relies on characters, the +1 gold characters for income, and I continually wiped them off the board, he just didn't have income. So he was, I mean, near the end of the game, he was only able to put out one guy a turn. And it took me a little while longer in that game to get the repeatable combo set up simply because I used all 3 Rainus' Hills early. Like, I literally was hard casting them just to kind of, you know, get defenders out of his dead pile, just to, you know, slow him down earlier in the game. So then I had to use Building Season to go get Pyre of the False Gods to set it up. But it took a little while to get going. And if I remember correctly, I think it took a while for me to draw an Iron Lord in that as well. But I didn't end up beating him. Then on to round 6 of Swiss, and this was by far my hardest Swiss game against Ryan Jones, Greyjoy House of Dreams, with Longship Iron Victory. And for the record, House of Dreams, which makes that location immune to non-plot card effects, I got rid of that location with newly made Lord, and I did not cheat. So nanny nanny poo poo on House of Dreams.
Did you bounce it with Search and Detain and then blow it up when you replayed it?
Yeah, I bounced it and then he replayed it and then I blew it up.
Nice.
But that was a tough game. He got out to an early lead. I would kill some of his guys, and he was playing many powers long asleep and had a ton of holy guys and would just bring them back. And I'm like, ah, I can't keep guys in your dead pile. Ah, you know, really had to do my best to slow the game down. I thought I was going to lose, and then late in the game, very, very late, I got off.
Hello?
Whoa.
What's going on here?
I don't know. Greg, are you there?
He's during the podcast.
What? Greg, it sounds like somebody's driving a truck in your living room. Does anyone else hear that?
Yeah.
I mean, my air conditioner just turned on, but it's been on for a lot of the show.
Okay, whatever it was faded out now.
I don't know what it is. My air conditioner's still on. Or air heater, I guess I should say.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. I'm not doing anything but talking, so. Okay.
Something's wrong with Brett's mic. Anyways.
I pulled off a Westeros Bleeds. He had a standing Mokoro that he used to save Mokoro. He discarded a dupe on Victarion. And then he lost his other two guys, but he thought he was sitting pretty. But I had three gold left, played Storm the Gate, so wiped those two kneeling guys off. And all of a sudden, the complexion of that game completely changed. Because he had been handling all my resets up to that point in time. And then when I was able to pull off the double one, it just changed. And then I was able to eventually turn the game. But it was a long game. We had 5 minutes called on us. And that was the game where I got Oakenshield poured out. And I went from 5 to 15 power in two turns. Wow. Oakenshield poured it was huge. And that card is, I've just realized that card is a lot better than what I thought. Initially, long before I put it in this deck, I thought you had to kneel it to claim the power. And I thought, man, I mean, you're going six rounds to get the six power. Or even if you're using a naval deck, three rounds, and I realized, wait, you don't kneel it. You just win a challenge. Remove a gold token, claim a power. Oh, my goodness. You know, this is a very powerful card. So it did win me the game. Then in after Swiss, I'm 6-0. I had the number one seed for the first time ever in my life.
Nice.
I have to be honest. You know, my deck was kind of the buzz. You know, had a lot of people talking about it. We were even getting messages on our Two Champs and a Chump Facebook page about my deck because the live feed. And then it just dropped a crap load in the first round of single limb. And I drew into all my Iron Lores early and simply never drew into Refurbished Hulk, never drew into Desperate Measures, never drew into Westeros Bleeds. I drew into Storm the Gates, but he was using a deck. I was Chad Jamnick, who was running Baron Knights Hollow Hill, the army recursion deck. And lo and behold, the two armies he gets out earliest are Northern Cavalry Flanks, the dudes that don't kneel. So the Gates was useless. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I think I marshaled five cards that entire game. And he walked away. It was not. All right, well, I pretty much don't think I would have beaten anybody with my deck playing that way. I don't have to have Refurbished Hulks early, but normally between Much and More and Desperate Measures, I'm able to dig deep enough to get some of the pieces I need, with that being one of them. You know, every once in a blue moon during practice games, I'd use Building Season to go get Refurbished Hulk, and maybe I should have done that in this game really, really early. I'm not sure it really still would have made a difference, but, I mean, he just blew me out. My deck went thumbs down in that game, which is really disappointing, as well as it had gone all day long and done exactly what I'd wanted it to do all day long. All of a sudden I have a game where I just crap out. So it is what it is. I mean, we play a game where luck is involved and, yep. You know, it just didn't work out for me there.
Yeah, dang. It was pretty beautiful while it was working, though.
I'd agree with that.
Well, aside from that, maybe just a brief bit about Melee, which I had mentioned in passing as kind of the genesis of my deck. I just wanted to throw some props out to Melee this year, which, as far as I've known and heard from everybody, was pretty well. Just a blast. Was fun. People wheeling and dealing. Everything above board. Pretty wide variety of control to rush and whatnot. Overall, though, I kept getting paired at tables with other Lannister players. In fact, at my last table, it was three Lanny players and then a Rush guy, which kind of sucked for him. But then the guy running the Dominance Tywin deck won because I can't count power. So
Lols.
Yeah, that happened. So what kind of impressions did you guys have? Good overall? We all played this year, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
We sure did.
I have no interest in talking about Melee.
who was that bad, hey?
I don't want to talk about it.
Nice.
I mean, I got first in 2 seconds, and I should have made top 16.
That's better than me.
I'm not
going to
say anything beyond that.
Oh, right. Never mind. I did forget about that particular thing when I brought this up. Yeah. Well,
we had sweet Daryl's Dirty Dozen moment. Yeah, in my first Melee.
That is the best thing to happen in Melee.
Detail, what happened? Dope.
So it's me sitting there with Baratheon, House of Dreams, the wall, the good wall, the barrel wall. And then also is Tyler Hickman, who's playing Martell Knights of the Hollow Hill, which would later turn out to be Sand Snakes. David Strokes playing Targ Summer, and Robert Kopp playing Baron No Agenda. So basically, this game ended in one turn. first wow. turn, yeah, there's three summoning seasons and one time for Ravens. There was a little craziness going. Like, all these guys were awesome. They were hilarious. We were having a good time. I got plenty of shit about being terrible at the game at this table, which was awesome. A little bit of betrayal. So it had everything that you would expect in a fun Melee game. Anyways, so Tyler Hickman drops the Red Viper that I love so much, the Warcrest one that stands, yada, yada, yada. Has him duped, convinces the Targ player to military him, and, you know, I mean, I know what's coming. It's Martell Knights of the Hollow Hill, but I was like, you know what? I'm not going to have much of a problem with these guys. Whatever. I'll let it, you know, I let it go. Whatever, won't tell him. Don't care. Anyway, pops him. And he kills duped Red Viper, too. So,
oh, wow.
I didn't expect him to kill him that early, to be fair. So, anyways, he let him go. And then, boom, Sand Snakes are shit out of every orifice, et cetera, et cetera. So, he's going in. He claims, like, he's way up there now. He's like a 10 power after he does his challenges. Anyways, challenges go all the way over to Robert Kopp, who went last. Robert is playing Baron No Agenda. There's some cracks about me sucking, and he says something. He's trying to decide who to challenge, and he's just like, Daryl, you don't have an intrigue icon over there, do you? I go, nope. And he's like, not unless you can grow one, right? Which I took as sort of like I'm an idiot type thing, which was hilarious. Like, I took it like it was funny. I don't know how he meant it, but I it's funnier to think of it that way. But I know that, and I'm sitting in second place. I have like 7 power, and I know that Tyler, the Martell Knights of the Hollow Hill player, supports me. So that if he intrigues me, he's going to defend and just win the game. He's going to defend for me if I don't post because I don't have an intrigue icon. Anyways, I go, nope, I don't. And then he intrigues me, and then Tyler's like, I support him, and I point at him, and I go, not unless you can grow one. And then I get second place. Now, the new way that the scoring is, that didn't probably turn out to be the best idea because that was only worth 3 points, but it's completely worth it. It was hilarious. It was a table full of awesome guys. Yeah. Actually, I don't think it's Strokes. I think it's Stromes, actually. David Stromes. I think my deal corrected that. So sorry, David, if you're listening to the show. David Stromes was the Targ Summer player.
I have a I'm going to have to leave here soon, guys, but I have a singular story from Melee as well, and I feel pretty much the same as you guys. I thought it was the most above board Melee tournament. It just felt legit. It felt good. You know, I mean, it's still Melee, so there were times I was like, maybe I'd rather be doing something else, but, you know, otherwise I had a good time. Well, in my second game, We're in the final round. Time has been called. It's an extremely close game. I'm the fourth player, or I'm the player going fourth during challenge phases. The first player has 12 power. The second player has 13. The third player has 10, and I'm sitting at 8. But here's the thing. Everybody's knelt out except for one guy on my board. Who is that one guy? Tywin Lannister. The player who has 10 power has 9 cards. I only have like 4 in hand. And I can't attack the player with 13, and the player with 12 had only one card in hand or none. So I knew Tywin would have to kneel to attack him. So I attack the player with all the cards in hand with an intrigue challenge. And keep in mind, I have power behind the throne. So simple math says 4 challenges with Tywin. That's 4 renown. Everybody's knelt out. That's 4 unopposed. That's 8 power. I'm already at 8. I would win the game that challenge phase, right? I do my first entry. I win by 4. He plays Viper's Rage.
Blank on my icons.
Womp womp.
And I find out afterwards that Viper's Rage is a singleton he has in his deck. Of all the things that could happen to go from winning the table, which I thought I was going to win the table. The other two players both thought I was going to win the table because neither of them could do anything. I mean, it was almost like one of those, hey, we're all about to shake Greg's hand, but look what just happened. And so I end up getting 2 power, 1 for unopposed and 1 for I must have opposed him because I go up to 10. And so I tied for last place instead of first. I tied for last place because of that card.
Ouch.
And then I won my last table. So I got a second to fourth tied for third. And first. So had that game, had Viper's Rage not been in his hand, I would have made the cut and actually been in the top, probably top 6 or 7 players with 2 firsts and a second. But nope. Instead, I missed the cut by 2 points.
Well, them's the breaks, I guess.
Yep, that's exactly what it is. Unfortunately, I don't get to tell people to grow intrigue icons like Daryl does. So.
It happens, bro.
Yeah.
Well, you can just tell them to grow a dead pile instead.
Yeah. Not to mention you. I mean, come on. To be fair, you played Fear of Winter in a melee deck.
I didn't just play Fear of Winter. I played Fear of Winter or Burning Bridges first turn in every game.
Good lord. So, wow.
People must have hated you so much.
I'm sure to a certain degree they did, yes. Especially the guy who played Viper's Rage, I have to be honest, there's a little bit of karmic justice because he was playing Martell Knights of the Hollow Hill, and he had to play me round 1 and round 2 where I reveal Fear of Winter first turn and Burning Bridges second turn in both those games. So wow. A Martell Knights of the Hollow Hill player is basically sitting there saying, thank you for letting me do nothing for 2 turns.
Well,
so, I guess he owed it to me. But anyways, guys, it's been good being on the show. I apologize for having to run. I've just got someone waiting right here for me. So I will say... It was good.
God, this is awkward. Get the hell out of here, Greg. Yeah,
right.
Take it easy, Greg.
Catch you later, Greg.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Got to get the D-dubs.
Yeah. Well, that, I think, seems like a good point to break over into a bit of props and slops, don't you think, guys?
Yeah.
Sure.
All right.
Props and slops.
All right. I bet Daryl's just been waiting to throw some props out there from World Championship weekend.
Oh, God. I got so many props. Well, my first prop is just going to be to all the fans out there. In doing this show, you know, we go through some, there's a real even flow of it. Cause you go through times when you're not really doing much in the way of tournaments. You're not really seeing any of the action or any of the hype, and you sort of, every now and then it sort of feels like you're doing something that doesn't matter. I mean, the best way to put it, like,
yeah,
we obviously know it matters. Yeah. You know, because it's not the biggest game in the world. It's not the most popular pastime or anything like that. And so, you know, every now and then I've thought about just, you know, kind of retiring from the game, even just kind of like, you know, but then every time we go to one of these tournaments, the big tournaments, and we go to one of these conventions or something like that, it really fuels you in a way that makes you want to keep going. And the main reason of that, if not the only reason, is the fans. You guys are awesome. Everyone is super cool. This year at Worlds was especially fantastic in just meeting everyone.
Fantastic. I see what fantastic. You did there.
Yep. So thank you for coming out there and being awesome and buying me beer. And, you know, just even some of the conversations that we have is really great. So it's all because of the fans. It's all because of the game. You know, this is why we do it. So huge props.
Yeah. I think I really have to second Daryl there. I think, you know, ever since we first started, there've definitely been folks listening, obviously. And there've been folks we've known, you know, they've mentioned this, that, or the other about shows and stuff. But it really seems like this year, there were more fans than ever, coming up and wanting to, meet me and chat. Met a guy, Roy, if I'm recalling right, from Norway, who caught me, in the, lobby of the Radisson, if I remember right. And we played a couple pickup games and stuff, and, you know, people I hadn't had the chance to meet before, Aaron Glazer and Matt, I can't think of his last name, though his name on the boards is Relo or Relo. I forget how to pronounce it, though I do remember asking him. And a ton of other people that I'm forgetting. The whole Thunder Bay crew from Canada were all awesome. And I'm not going to name them all because I'm afraid I would miss one. So it just... I don't know. There were a lot more folks and new different ones that I had not had the chance to meet before that were coming up and saying, oh, man, you know, you make my Fridays, or, you know, I was trying to get this new friend into Thrones and I had him listen to your show and he's playing now, or, you know, stuff like that. It was awesome. And not to knock another small point that Daryl made, but drinks. I'm definitely enthused that I didn't pay for any booze on Saturday. And I think that really says something when you've reached a fan base who's willing to pay for all of your alcohol all day. So I cannot prop all of you guys enough for that.
God, yeah, by the end of the night, I was declining drinks, man.
Yeah, I actually had Alex from Beyond the Wall had actually bought me two drinks to start the night, two Guinness. So I actually had one in each hand, and as the night went, when we were out of Joe Censor's, that is, like, I would finish one Guinness and another one would appear. I'm not exactly sure how many I drank, but I do know I spent the entire night with two Guinness in my hands.
Good Lord.
I will largely third all of that, with a special prop to a guy from Sacramento, I believe, whose name I honestly do not remember. But there were several shots that were bought for me, at least one that I can absolutely remember that were bought for me that I had no interest in drinking, that he valiantly stepped up for and then said that I had taken, so I didn't get a flack from the people that had bought it.
Wait, so now you're letting the cat out of the bag.
I am.
Oh, but he was a good guy.
I mean, I also told the guy that I didn't want the shot he was buying, so.
Wow, so that's even better, like... Not only do you get free drinks, but you get fans willing to take one for the team.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or several.
And let's be clear, we were doing this show way before people were buying us booze because of it. And we would continue to do so. We're just saying thanks for doing it.
Yes.
So we don't expect to buy us booze for the show. We would never be offended if we went out one night with you guys and you didn't buy us a drink, because I don't know about you guys, but I don't expect it at all.
No, I think that's why it blew me away and why I've mentioned it several times since then. Like, it just was the coolest, most surreal thing that I've had happen to me because of this show.
Although I do also have a slop to John Bond, who still owes me a drink.
Oh, God, I love that. Hey, me too, I think.
You know, DC Rob owes me a drink, too.
The hell?
No, I just couldn't collect because my hands were full.
All right. I have something that's, I don't know if it's a prop or a slop, but we were talking with Eric Lang.
Oh my goodness.
And I caught the guy a couple times. We're just talking about all kinds of stuff. One thing before I get to the prop or indoor slop, whatever it is that was interesting in talking to him. He was just like, yeah, this year I decided that I wasn't going to say no to going to a convention or something like that. He's like, I wasn't going to look for one or say, hey, I want to do this, but I wasn't going to say no. And then he's like, yeah, and 14 conventions later, here I am. I just thought that was crazy to go to 14, you know, gaming conventions or gaming related events in a year. That's crazy. I've gone to two.
That's living the dream, man.
Yeah, I've gone to two this year, and then in 5 months I'll be in at PAX East, and I think that's just going balls deep. I mean,
agreed.
Crazy that guy has that kind of energy. Anyways. So we're talking to Eric Lang, and then we mentioned something about Star Wars and the three or four player thing, right? Where you face against one giant player who's like dark side or light side.
The Balance of the Force expansion specifically.
And we're just like, yeah, whatever happened to that? And he's like, that's not available for you guys to buy. And we're like, no. And he's like, well, let me look into this. And he straight up Houdini'd us. He took the opportunity to be like, I'll be right back. You guys stay right here. That's what he said. And then he left, and we never saw him again.
We sure didn't.
I'm not sure if he was even there to begin with. Maybe we imagined him.
Though, in his defense, I did talk to Eric Dahlman, one of the LCG designers who's working on Star Wars, later that evening. And he did say that Eric came and asked him about it. We just... Somehow he never made it from Eric back to us.
Which I guess is not surprising if he got caught by some other people wanting to talk to him.
He might have gotten mugged in the alley, and we don't know.
Or maybe Eric was like, so are you going to go tell those guys? He's like, nah, fuck that, man.
I'm out.
I'm gonna go hang out over here. So
yeah, he might. Who knows? That man's crazy. I wish I could have got a recording of this, and I'm going to go ahead and tell it anyway, despite the fact that Eric wouldn't let me record it. He didn't straight up say I couldn't. He was just very evasive when I asked him to repeat it. But I don't think he'll listen to this episode again, ever. So I don't think we're in too big a trouble there. But I definitely got to hear him say that he was going to go put some people in their place and get free stuff by declaring, I'm Eric Lang, bitch! It was pretty great.
It's kind of funny to see a guy like Eric Lang say that. Obviously,
yeah, who's so
it's
like,
all in fun.
Oh, yeah, totally. But he's just normally, like, such the, like, nice, friendly, upstanding guy when I've been around him. And he obviously has that well-known persona on the internet and everything. And then to just hear him actually cuss, like, that was the first time I'd ever heard him cuss. So it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, he said, was it just Eric, I'm Eric Lang, bitch, or was it Eric effing Lang? I don't remember.
No, it was just I'm
Eric Lang, bitch.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't really have any other props or slops.
Nothing else, huh? Okay.
I mean, I am going to slop long-ass car rides.
No, fair enough.
As we discussed, we do this again, we may be looking at flying.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and slop our buddy, Alex, who I think he was playing Lannister No Agenda, if I'm not mistaken, with Kevin, character agenda. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, man, I played against a guy who is Martel Quentin, and there was just nothing I could do with that Vengeful. I couldn't kneel anyone because of my agenda. And we had to break the news to him that keywords will go before responses. So it could have worked. Womp womp.
Yeah. But, you know, he kind of bounces around from game to game, and Netrunner is his main thing right now. So he's been out of the timing rules for Thrones for a bit.
That's a that's totally like something that would happen to me. Like, I might as well be slopping myself because that's an easy thing to miss, but it's just kind of funny. I don't really have anything else.
I think that's it for me.
All right. Well, that was a pretty fine episode of Two Champs, One Chump.
Our triumphant return after the hiatus, I think.
Yes, post worlds.
Danger zone.
Danger zone.
Danger zone.
A zone of danger.
Danger zone. Welcome to the danger zone. Turn around, there's nothing to see.